Hi, welcome to Standard Podcast. My name is Kevin Lings. I'm the Chief Economist within Standard. Today, I'm joined by Amit Palmer, who is an investment specialist within JP Morgan Asset Management. And we're going to be talking, as usual, about global equities and what we've seen happening in the equity market more broadly. And then we're going to focus on the Standard Global Select Fund, which is obviously sub-managed by JP Morgan out of London. Amit, thanks for joining us again. I hope you guys have had a great couple of weeks. I know in South Africa, it's been a difficult phase in terms of weather conditions, and hoping that we have a good State of the Nation address in South Africa and that our politics can make some further progress. But from your perspective, how were you seeing equity markets? The U.S., for me, had a... It had a decent return. It wasn't, in the quarter, it wasn't as good as the first quarter. But then, Europe seemed to falter a little bit. So how are you seeing equity markets overall?
Thanks very much, Kevin. And as always, absolutely fantastic to be speaking to you today and to all your listeners. I think very much to your point, the second quarter continued many of those trends from the first, in particular with the help that the semiconductor sector and, of course, that play towards AI really has driven that. But it was more muted than the first quarter, and you started to see perhaps some elements of some jitters around the sustainability of this rally now that's continued to take place in the US. The environment in Europe and also China has remained actually pretty sluggish, and it feels like we're entering into the later stages of this phase of really the Mag 7 recovery. It's become a much more narrow cohort of names, whether it's Mag 6 or Mag 5 or Mag 4. But the picture is getting much clearer that margins from this group, although we expect them to continue growing, when you look at companies beyond Mag 7, there's more questions being asked about those margins and the delivery of those beyond there. So I would categorize this quarter as being much more mixed, albeit when you look at the overall headline level of, say, the broad market index, MSCI World returns, say, 2.6%. So not a bad quarter by any means, but certainly, to your point, not to the same extent that the first quarter was.
Amit, do you think that the general softening of U.S. economic data is having some impact on optimism around equities? Do you think that's starting to factor into people's thinking? I mean, it's not that the data's gone especially soft or that we necessarily are forecasting a recession, but it does feel at the margin that it's not quite as vibrant as it used to be. And perhaps, therefore, maybe company earnings will come under increasing pressure.
Yeah, I mean, I would characterize that in two ways. You've started to see U.S. consumer data coming through a bit weaker, and that is a bit of a cause for concern there. Now, again, when you start looking beyond Magnificent Seven names and the technology sector and the most semiconductor-exposed names, increasingly, you're seeing pricing pressures really creeping through and impacting the consumer there. McDonald's, for example, in America, a McDonald's meal is now comparable in cost to Chipotle. Now, these are two very different price brackets, levels of food service that is being delivered. And you're starting to see McDonald's actually, in terms of demand, in terms of actually some of their initiatives as far as pricing, Happy Meals, whatever it might be, actually coming forward with more economical options now. So they are starting to feel the pinch of some of that consumer weakness coming through. And we believe that that's really, we're at the start of that cycle there. What we have seen, though, and this is where our thinking is, the consumer staples sector is becoming much more attractive overall. And this is a point perhaps to touch on a bit later about how attractive defensive sectors are at the moment. But staples and those, that more defensive exposure overall, we feel is offering a much more compelling valuation. And so the overall shape right now, although on the back of this US outperformance in AI, the opportunity set it's opening up, and we've discussed this plenty, and the view continues to hold, is it's opening up many more of those opportunities in more defensive sectors elsewhere in the market.
And Amit, do you think that there is a maturing of the Magnificent Seven in terms of finding a place in people's portfolio that is long-term in nature, and that you're going to see people hold a higher level of exposure to those tech stocks through the cycle? Or do you think it's very much cycle dependent and there could be rotation into other technologies as we go through the next business cycle?
So I think let's take this in two steps. The Magnificent Seven component of it, when we think about what you're getting from them and the size of those companies, for any broad global portfolio or US-focused portfolio, it's very difficult to ignore them just because of the size and the weight that they have in the index. And by the very nature of portfolio construction, then it's very difficult to overlook them from the asset allocation perspective. Now, in terms of other names rotating into that cohort or other beneficiaries of that, yes, we're finding that much more worldwide. One area in particular that we are actually leaning into, and this is AI related, but it's memory chips and the upcycle and CapEx we're seeing for memory chips and those related companies. So companies like Samsung, companies like SK Hynix, Micron, these are where we've actually initiated some new positions in the portfolio more recently. And that really is to capitalize on that upscaling of memory chips. So looking beyond just Magnificent Seven, you still have lots of exciting opportunities out there worldwide. TSMC is also one of our top active weights in the portfolio and continues to be in terms of how great quality that company is.
Amit, in terms of just taking the AI theme a little bit further, is there any evidence of people being interested in companies that could be longer-term beneficiaries of AI development? So I'm thinking, as an example, medical research, where you're able to process information a lot more effectively, not just a lot quicker, but a lot more effectively. And so potentially you can arrive at drug therapies more efficiently and maybe have a potential chance of breakthroughs. Is the investor interest shifting into those types of companies that could benefit from AI, not just the tech guys directly involved in developing AI?
Yes, for sure. And I think the read across that AI is having across multiple sectors, and I say this now, even from a financial services standpoint, where in the last month we've had at least two to three demonstrations of ChatGPT style systems that could become available to us or applications of that within a financial services context. It's very much the same within healthcare. It's very much the same within many consumer sectors as well. But what I would say here is the way we would look to play that is not through investing into a new disruptive, suddenly very AI-focused company. It's the applications of that technology in the context of global brands and global businesses. And whether that's in the healthcare sector or the financial services sector or those more consumer-facing sectors or transportation, whatever it might be. Really, it's utilizing our research base and our analyst coverage to identify where the incumbent winners and those with pricing power already within their niches, where they're making those investments for the future.
Okay, brilliant. So can we chat about Global Select a little bit in detail? We've gone through the second quarter. Can you give us some sense of how the fund has performed relative to benchmarks during the quarter?
Yes, so Select, we're very pleased to say again, it was a positive quarter for the strategy overall, delivered more than 1% in terms of excess return against the MSCI World Index. And it's a slightly different story this time around because where in the first quarter, I think about some of the top contributors being TSMC, ASML, Nvidia. It's slightly shaken up a bit more in the quarter ending the 30th of June. TSMC remains one of the top contributors in the portfolio overall. But looking down the list of some of the stocks that actually delivered the most in terms of excess return, one of the losers from the overall AI cycle, say Intel, who is being left behind, not holding that stock overall has contributed to relative returns. And then actually, quite interestingly, many of those names have come from the healthcare sector. So it's always strange talking about AI with such preeminent dominance, because sometimes the shadow has been cast on the other very exciting technology from really the last 18 months, which is those GLP-1 treatments. And of course, Novo Nordisk has been a very prominent active weight in the funds and the strategy over a number of years now. That was one of the leading contributors there. I mentioned defensives before. United Health Group was also one of the key contributors in the portfolio too. That's a more defensive healthcare services, health services play in the US. And then also Regeneron Pharmaceuticals was one of the leading contributors there too, on the more pharma and medtech space. So it's much more, there's a differentiated cohort of companies that have really come through in this quarter. And I wouldn't want to deliver the message, despite what I said earlier on, that it's entirely dominated just by semiconductor exposed names. It's a more mixed experience over the course of this quarter, which is very pleasing to see.
Amit, has there been rotation in terms of the equities that are in the portfolio? Has that gone up a little bit more in order to adjust for the performance of the Magnificent Seven, or has the portfolio been able to remain fairly consistent?
No, so this is very much the trend of this year, which has been taking profits on those more expensive, higher growth cyclicals and that cohort of stocks, really semiconductor exposed names, and allocating at the margins and building up positions in defensives. And this is what I mentioned earlier, but in particular, consumer staples is a sector. So thinking about companies like the Nestle's, the Heineken's of the world, which we feel are offering a very, very compelling valuation point at the moment. And of course, just that more defensive play as we're coming into the second half of the year. And also sectors like the US utility sector. So building up positions in names like NextEra, where they re-rated quite significantly last year. They actually have recovered quite substantially since then and continuing to build up those positions there. Some of the other movements in the portfolio at present. So we've actually sold out of McDonald's, just on that change of perception and for some of those reasons that I highlighted earlier. We also took profits and sold out entirely in our position in Progressive, the US insurance name, where again, it had now, thinking about it in the context of our investment process, it was in the most expensive quintile as far as valuation measures go. So we took that opportunity to also exit the name there as well. And of course, I mentioned some of the names where we've been adding to, some of those South Korean names. So that's some of the movement in the portfolio overall, but to characterize it, it is profit taking on high growth cyclicality and then allocating to more defensives.
Okay. So if we then, you know, if I remember, the first quarter was a good performance, second quarter has been a decent outperformance. So you would argue that so far this year, it's held up well. But clearly, we're going into a phase now where I would imagine it gets a bit trickier. The reason is you're heading into a U.S. election. You can't be entirely sure about that outcome, although I guess most people are increasingly assuming that Trump wins the election. But if he does, that could bring a whole lot of disruption to the U.S. economy. You're also heading into an environment where you would be expecting the US to start their interest rate cutting cycle, but that may well be accompanied by a further softening of US economic activity, which could undermine the outlook in terms of US valuation. So my sense is it's going into a more challenging environment, which obviously puts any portfolio under a bit of pressure. How are you guys seeing the next 6 months? Are you being a lot more cautious, a lot more conservative? Are you trying to prepare for certain events in order to use that as an indicator to adjust the portfolio? What's the general thinking going into the second half of the year?
I would pick up on your key word there as being cautious. And that's a cautious outlook as we're coming into the second half of the year, both at the headline macro level, but also from an earnings perspective as well at the corporate level. And when we think about the various elements around the world at the moment, whether it's heightened geopolitical uncertainty, an election year in multiple countries. We just had one in the UK a few weeks ago. And all signs are pointing towards a wider dispersion of outcomes than perhaps the market is fully pricing in at the moment. And it's considering we were already shifting the portfolio to a more defensive stance, we were taking down the sensitivity to the overall market at the start of the year, reducing the beta of the portfolio. Our sense was that wide dispersion of outcomes for the second half of the year and beyond wasn't fully being priced in, and investor consensus was just a bit too complacent around it. So then picking up on the second part of your question there, how we're positioning for that, a lot of this is driving that interest in those more defensive sectors. Now, growth, the outperformance of growth since the start of 2023 on the back of AI, we're not quite at 2021 levels of exuberance. We're not at the very peaks that we were there. But growthier sectors are looking expensive at present. And so even if it's not as extreme as the 2020 to 2021 period, what we are finding on the other side of that is defensives are looking as attractive as they were back then. And so the two elements that we're starting to see is these concerns are starting to manifest themselves much more in the data that's coming through, in earnings reports and earnings releases that are coming through, in that wage growth actually outstripping, wage inflation outstripping goods costs as well. And so it's pointing to a much more uncertain environment. And that is why the overall direction of the portfolio, we're looking to buy that insurance and that cushion for the portfolio at the very compelling valuation now, rather than getting into a 2022 scenario where you then need to be shifting more defensive and you're doing so at a much more premium valuation.
Emmett, what would make you guys become even more conservative? Is it a question of just outright economic growth, and that if the growth rates slow, then you need to become more defensive? So is it just a question of the economics? Is it a question of valuations, that on some of the stocks the valuations are simply too demanding, and as you say, you see a little bit more value in defensive? So what would encourage you to be more conservative from your current position?
So I'll take the valuation point to start, because on a valuation basis, there's plenty of reasons to be excited right now. And although the tone I'm giving is much more cautious as we're going forward, the spread between the most expensive and the cheapest stocks is at near-time highs. And that is represented by those very headline valuations, which have been grabbed by, again, AI beneficiaries, and then the overlooking of many of these other names and sectors. So from a stock picker perspective, it's actually quite a sanguine and fruitful environment. Now, from an economic perspective, the picture is a little bit more mixed because, again, there's jitters now emerging about US strength, particularly from the consumer side. The overall pace of rate cuts, I think there's more question marks there than there are actually answers. It's not a clean path forward. And the persistence and stickiness of inflation, again, remains a key challenge, I think, across and still continues to be a key challenge which faces many countries. So there's a multitude of factors there which could quite easily derail and take us from a soft landing scenario into something more severe quite easily. And I think that's what really preoccupies the minds of certainly our equity research platform overall. It's those threats to thesis overall worldwide. The dispersion of earnings and the delivery of earnings, again, that points to why having a good, strong, robust, deep research team is so powerful and points towards why stock selection is so important in this environment. But again, from the economic and the headline level, yes, it's a more difficult picture to call.
Emmett, can we maybe just end on a positive note in terms of what aspect of the portfolio's position do you think is the most exciting, the area where you would have the most conviction over? Now, you guys do a brilliant job in not just looking at the different asset classes and deciding if you're overweight, underweight, and within equities you are able to differentiate well between companies, but you attribute a level of conviction to some of those investment views. So if I say to you, in terms of a high conviction bet, where would you guys be the most excited when it comes to Global Select?
I think looking at the AI cycle beyond the US is becoming increasingly exciting there. And I highlighted some of those memory chip names from South Korea, and also our continued conviction behind names like TSMC and ASML as well. And so I think, leaving aside the natural US bias sometimes that some investors have, there's plenty of opportunities worldwide, and seeing some of that leadership in areas like the world's leading foundry, like the leaders in memory chip manufacturing, it is truly exciting, and to see that recovery actually fanning out there. And that will be a real area of interest going forward, to see how that memory chip upcycle really continues and pans out going forward. So I would cite some of those names there, some of those Asian technology and chip maker style names too.
Brilliant. Thanks, Amit. As usual, thanks for your time. Great insights, and thanks for giving us a complete update on how we're doing, and I certainly hope the fund's outperformance continues. Thanks.